everyone. Thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's September 2019, and you're listening to episode 140, which is a conversation about the theology of Jen Hatmaker. On this episode, I'm joined by Anne Kennedy, who has an MDiv and is the author of Nailed It, 365 Sarcastic Devotions for Angry and Worn Out People. And she blogs about current events and theological trends at Preventing Grace, which is a blog on patheos.com. Anne has written a feature article about Jen Hatmaker for the Christian Research Journal in the new Volume 42, Number 2 issue. Her article is called The Theological Mess in the Moxie of Jen Hatmaker. And you can read her article by subscribing to the Christian Research Journal at equip.org. Anne, it's good to have you on.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So for some of our listeners who maybe do not follow the evangelical mom kind of blogger sphere, there is a woman out there called Jen Hatmaker, and she became popular. So who is Jen Hatmaker and why is she so well known?
Jen Hatmaker is she rose to fame as a blogger, and I actually did read her blog way back when. The post that I first read that was really funny, I think really launched her to success, was called The Worst End of the School Year Mom Ever, where she really, touched the hearts of all of us by documenting, how terrible the end of the year is when you're exhausted and your kids are straggling home with backpacks full of food that's a year old, and it's tough. So that made her famous, and from then on she wrote several books. But really why most people know her now is that because in 2016 she came out for LGBT relationships and within the context of the church, and that caused the major dust up that kind of made her well-known on the internet. So that's why she's famous, is because of that, I would say. She's written a lot of books, though, and she has a great podcast called For the Love. So that's what she's currently known for.
Well, can you tell us a little bit more about what she has written? I know that she is also a pastor's wife, and I remember a while back, it's been a few years, she was just really popular, like on social media. I would just see in my Facebook feed a lot of women reposting things that she had said. So, what has she written and why has it resonated with women? And tell us a little bit about her podcast that you mentioned.
She was also on an HDTV remodeling show that made her more popular as well, because she has 5 kids. She's adopted some children, and she's done some Bible studies. She did a book about paring back your life, dealing with the piles of stuff that you have. It's called An Experimental Mutiny Against Excess. So how can you kind of stop just buying and throwing away? And then the two latest and most famous books, one was For the Love, Fighting for Grace in a World of Impossible Standards, and then Of Mess and Moxie, Wrangling Delight Out of This Wild and Glorious Life. Those two were very popular, and the For the Love launched the podcast. So she interviews a lot of people about their work. She sort of has the corner on elevating and encouraging other people. Her podcast is full of, encouragement and finding out what people are writing about and doing and bringing them to a wider audience. And she's a very good podcaster. She's very dedicated, and she gets really famous people on as well. So she's kind of gone from mommy blogger over into general Christian encouragement. And she's very political, more and more political in her blogging and her messaging. And I noticed also recently online that she has done some Bible studies, video Bible studies for young women, for girls. It's sort of ostensibly like you would, here's how you can read the Bible, but it's really more, how can you survive adolescence in sort of a Christian way?
So you mentioned that one of the books that she has written is the book that is of Mess and Moxie. So what is Moxie?
I actually had to look it up. I read the whole book before I really tried to know what Moxie is. It's nerve. So it's like being strong, determined, having a force of character. That's the technical definition. So the Of Mess and Moxie is this very popular right now joining together of you don't need to be perfect. You don't need to have your life together. But you also need to put yourself out there and be the person that you want to be and that God is calling you to be. So you can curate your life. You can live into your desires and your dreams, but you also don't have to have it together. You have permission to live in the messiness of life and not worry about it too much. So both For the Love and Of Mess and Moxie are kind of autobiographical. Here's how I do it. And so you can have permission to do it that way too. Books with a lot of advice and a lot of personal stories about how she's made life work for her. They're very easy and fun reads, both of them, but they're not very full of sort of deep theological reflection.
Well, her book, Of Mess and Moxie, came out a couple of years ago, and I remember there was a bunch of controversy around it that resulted in her book being pulled from Christian bookstores.
Was it really? I should have paid attention
to that. Yeah, it was around the same time. You know, I'm going to ask you a little bit later about her whole view of the LGBTQ community. But because of that, when that particular book came out of Mess and Moxie in 2017, it was banned or taken off the shelves of Lifeway Christian stores, which I'm not even sure if those exist anymore. But it did, you know, that's kind of like put her even more into the spotlight, maybe in like the non-religious, non-evangelical world, just by being banned. It just like made news feeds and everything like that. And so she kind of broke out of, I think, just kind of the evangelical slice that she had been ministering to be a little bit larger. And just for our listeners to know, like her podcast had over 1 million downloads. So she is definitely someone people listen to. But specifically, I mean, her primary target audience had been women. So, and like I said, in my own social media feeds, I had seen people posting like, you know, really pretty flowered infographics with quotes from Jen Hatmaker. And so she strikes a chord with women. So how does she encourage women in particular?
I think she was one of the first ones to sort of go with the, you can have a messy life and you can be a great person and you don't have to have it all together. I think at a time when social media was really on the rise and people weren't handling it very well, you know, envy was sort of the name of the game and Pinterest was overwhelming everybody's emotional space. And so she had this very relaxed kind of, it's fine. You don't have to live up to that. You can just be, you know, back in the day, we didn't have to have it all together and we can still reclaim that kind of life again. That I think is a really powerful message for women. And she was very Christian in her audience. That's what I was going to say. I do remember the Lifeway controversy, but I actually think it was when she had just done For the Love and just come out in favor of, you know, LGBT relationships. And I kind of think that Of Mess and Moxie came out after that. But it's the same kind of, you can just be whoever you want to be. So it feels like it should be more than that, but it really, I think it's mostly that just people are exhausted. Women in particular are exhausted by being measured up against a life that they can't live up to in their own minds, and they're not really equipped to, you know, enjoy. You know, a lot of women went to college and didn't really learn how to keep house and are overwhelmed by babies and want their side gig to work out for them, and they're dissatisfied and miserable. And so she kind of gets everybody's attention, recenters you, and, you know, gives you permission to be human and be imperfect, which I think really people need. The problem is when she begins to sort of spiritualize that and make it, you know, that itself is goodness, and there's no more to the gospel than you just having permission to be who you are. So I think that's one reason why she's been so damaging to evangelicals, is because she had the corner on the Christian market, and then she used that platform to embrace the LGBT agenda. The Lifeway thing was so interesting because it's as if there was no greater authority for evangelicals than Lifeway. That's how we knew that it was bad, because they pulled her books.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Ann Kennedy, who has written a feature article for the Christian Research Journal in the new print issue, Volume 42, Number 2. Her article about Jen Hatmaker is called "The Theological Mess in the Moxie of Jen Hatmaker." And to read her article in Volume 42, Number 2, please subscribe to the journal. You can subscribe to the journal by going to equip.org, and a subscription is $33.50. And it's really important for you to know that when you subscribe to the Christian Research Journal, you join this team of print subscribers, and all of your paid subscriptions help provide resources that minister to people around the world, especially on our website, equip.org. And that includes resources like this free podcast and also any free online articles as well. So we would like you to support us by subscribing to the journal. Now, maybe a subscription is not in your budget for this month. You can still support us by giving us a tip. If you like this podcast and if you read some of our articles that are free online, you can go to our website, equip.org, click on magazine, and at the drop-down menu, go to Postmodern Realities, and you will see a link to this episode about Jen Hatmaker. Click on that, you'll go to the landing page, and not only will you find a link where you can subscribe, but you'll also find a link where you can give us a tip, maybe $3, $5, $10 or $15, something that would be the cost of maybe a latte or a coffee drink for some people, or maybe the cost of a month's subscription to your favorite online streaming video service. So we really appreciate your support and your partnership, and would like you to consider supporting us so that we can continue to bring you this content. We were just talking about Jen Hatmaker's platform, like, you know, how her platform has grown over the last several years. So, and you did say earlier that, you know, now she's kind of pivoted a little bit from what she used to do in the beginning. So how is she using her platform currently?
She's bringing a lot of different kinds of people into giving them a platform. The one I was just listening to is an editor of religion at the New York Times. She gets really high level, you know, interesting people on. That's actually how I first came to know about Rachel Hollis, is because she had her on her podcast and was bringing her to, you know, kind of a more Christian audience. And she had, you know, Rachel Held Evans on several times. So she uses the podcast to find out what kinds of work people are doing. And she is very, very encouraging. She's very cheerful. She's very kind. And I think she carves out the kind space on the podcasting sphere, which I think is really good, as long as, I mean, I don't agree with most everybody that she has on her podcast, but she's very nice about it. And that she's had really, really interesting people on. So she's elevated people that probably weren't as well known and brought them to her huge audience. And she's very savvy about how she does that too. It's well curated, well delivered media that she's producing.
Well, you mentioned several times that she kind of created this uproar when she affirmed LGBTQ relationships. So what did she say about them, and how did she have a change of heart, or she just never said it before? And then once she had this big platform, she used that to, you know, communicate her views about that community in particular?
She expressed that she had a change of heart when she talked about it. Her own sort of journey. She said that she had, you know, been a sort of regular vanilla flavored evangelical. And then when she really began to get to know people in the LGBT community and really began to see how they had suffered, that she went back to the Bible at that point and reexamined what she had always known to be true, and discovered there that she had been wrong, and that the church should embrace this kind of lifestyle, and that people who are in that community can have just as good faith, if not better, than people who don't affirm that lifestyle. So yeah, she had a what Michael Kruger calls a deconversion story. His article on that is so helpful. She kind of follows the model that other people had around the same time, where she had one point of view and it turned out that that wasn't okay. And then she sort of repented of that and came to the light, as it were. In that case, it just happened to be to affirm the opposite of what the scriptures say about human sexuality. But as I studied her, I really think she already had the framework in place for that leap, because she just did not have a very deep sense of the whole narrative of scripture and who Jesus is and how humanity is related to him. So, for instance, I found there's a blog post from 2013. She says about Jesus, "Here was the good news. Upon heavy scrutiny, none of this remotely sounded like Jesus. He wasn't the problem, which was a relief, because when having a faith crisis, you don't want to discover your main character is a fraud. As far as I can tell, Jesus is the easiest sell on earth, because if you don't love a guy who healed lepers and pulled children onto his lap and silenced the religious elite and ate and drank with sinners, then you just don't know him." Her category for Jesus is this: he was rejected because he loved so much. He loved the marginalized, whom everybody hates. And so the good news is finding out that you just need to accept everyone and then you'll be saved. That was her Jesus before she came to accept homosexual relationships. And so it's interesting that everyone in the evangelical world was surprised by her switch. I think that it was very clear that she was going to end up in that place.
Well, I think, you know, not that it's a stereotype, but a lot of the mommy bloggers that have cropped up in, I would just say, like, you know, middle class, upper middle class, white evangelical spaces, where, you know, their primary audience is the minivan driving mom type of person that has really resonated, like you said, kind of the her end of the school year blog post that went viral or whatever. Usually those kinds of authors don't talk deeply about theology. So they might, you know, mention a few verses. We talked about this in our previous podcast about Rachel Hollis, that, you know, just kind of more encouragement and cheerleading with maybe a Bible verse or two. So if she doesn't go deeply into theology in her books and podcast, how would Jen Hatmaker define holiness? Because when we think about knowing God, the nature of God, we think about God's holiness and also our call to glorify him and be like him. So how would she handle some of those deeper theological issues that we need to talk about and truths that women need to know?
So I think that when, especially when she talks about LGBT relationships, the word that she invariably lands on is holy. She would define that sexual choice as holy. And she goes with that you can find holiness in common things. If you, you know, when you see a sunset, when you see the moon, when you rearrange your living room to make it more comfortable for the people in your life, all of those kinds of things are holy. Holiness is when you make space for the outcast and for the marginalized. In other words, she redefines holiness to be not about God, but about our actions and our experience of God, and to be the common things rather than the things that are set apart for God. So that redefinition of holiness, and then ultimately of love, it's a sort of pathway to making human sexuality into a sort of an expression of divine happiness or satisfaction, rather than us learning about who God is. Our experience of our own lives leads us to know and experience God. So that was the thing that I found most troubling as I read her. It is very light. She doesn't really think deeply and theologically, especially in her books, about who God is or who Jesus is. But she does these immense reversals of Christian doctrine and theological terms to turn them over on their head and make them be the opposite of what they're supposed to be. I mean, she describes at one point, I think for The Love, about rearranging her living room, bringing beauty into it, as if that's an expression of God's divine creative holiness. Rather than meditating on the perfection and beauty of God, she brings it down into the common stuff of the earth, which is not biblical. It's comfortable, but it's not biblical.
So in light of her like redefining terms, which, you know, that is really difficult. I think, you know, when she's trying to relate to these moms or women specifically, I think that's her primary audience, although she's, you know, gone past them, of course, at this point in her ministry or her career, is that, like you said, it feels comfortable but not biblical when people kind of reimagine or redefine things. So what does she say about love, and also how would she define what the gospel is? Because it seems to me by redefining holiness, it takes you away from the nature of God. So how does she even deal with basic biblical truths like the gospel and the love of God?
So love, the way that she takes it, is in the vein of most all progressives now, and that's that it's acceptance, it's inclusivity. So when you say that God is love, really what you're saying is that he accepts everyone, and that you should also therefore be like him and should accept everyone. So the reason that Jesus died was because he was too accepting, and we were unwilling to accept how accepting he was. And the gospel is you participating in that kind of inclusivity when you copy or model your life on the inclusive love of Jesus. You will sort of bring the world closer to him, and that's what the gospel is. So it sounds great, but it's quite onerous because there's no way to accept all human people. It doesn't deal with sin, with evil, with us being separated from God by our sin. It's very much a human-centered, works-based gospel. And I found it would be very exhausting. So even though she's encouraging women to accept, you know, the mess, they still have to so perfectly model Jesus that they bring the whole world to experience his love. And that's just not possible for human beings to do. It's also a complete misdefinition of what agape is, which is giving of yourself for the sake of another person, for the good of that person. It's not really about including people. It's about sacrificing yourself for them. So it's quite a much flatter version of biblical love. And it's not why, I mean, God says, you know, God is love, but he doesn't mean that he accepts and includes everyone in that at all. You know, he divides the world into those who accept him and those who reject him. So it's not a biblical gospel, and it's very onerous and works-based. And I think also the thing that I'd say that she has a particular spin on, that salvation or the gospel is really encouragement. So if you want to love as Jesus loved, what you'll do is you'll really encourage other people and bring them along. You'll affirm them, you'll build them up, you'll be excited about them. Your gospel will look very much like her podcast, which is peppy and cheerful, and you don't put anybody down. And if you can do that, then you probably are a good Christian. And it sounds great, of course, but it does not account for evil in the world, which as you listen to her stuff and you read it, you realize like there's a real tension going on. There's some actual deep unhappiness because she herself is not happy with the way that Christianity is going and with political divisions that are going on in our country and the way that Christians are being reported about and thought about and what some Christians are saying they accept and love. There's no way to deal with that because there's no real sense of evil. I don't think she's really having a way to account for it in a way that a classical Christian would, which is that people sin. They rebel against God and they need to be forgiven, and that sin needs to be atoned for, not just let go of or sorted out in therapy. You actually need the blood of Jesus to wash away your evil. That's not on offer. And so I think that even though she's really encouraging and kind of peppy in her platform and in her demeanor, she is increasingly disenfranchised by American Christianity.
So just in her view of the gospel, if she's not really dealing with what it is, and like you said, she's not accounting for how to answer for sin and suffering, just being peppy, who does she say that Christ is? In other words, is she just kind of come to the point of Jesus was a good teacher? She doesn't deal with his divinity, that he was God, that he had to die on the cross for sin so that people could be reconciled to God? Or is she just saying, well, he was a good human teacher and we should be more like him and he was accepting, and so therefore that's what we need to do and that's the gospel?
I mean, I don't see anywhere that she's actually come out and denied the divinity of Jesus. I've listened to some of the sermons that she's given in her church, and she's worked sort of systematically through some of the parables and straight reading of the text. She isn't saying that Jesus didn't do miracles or that he wasn't divine, but she doesn't lean on that or emphasize it in such a way that he would be able to do the work that he came to do, which was to atone for sin on the cross. That the cross is about Jesus showing the way to being good. So she doesn't come out and deny it, but she doesn't lean on it either. She doesn't actually emphasize it or say it in a clear way. So yeah, the gospel and the work of Jesus is to show us how to be good. And that's within our grasp. We are able to do that if we model ourselves after him. And the good things that he does, you know, the classical repairing the breach between God and man, it's accepting the marginalized and the outcast. So the gospel could be said to be, you know, having the proper understanding of American immigration policy or taking care of women who have been abused. That could be said to be part of the gospel itself, rather than maybe the outflow of the work of the gospel. If you've done that, then you've properly believed in Jesus, and so you're acceptable to him and you'll probably go to heaven. So it's very earthly based and increasingly political.
Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for Anne. So, Anne, what do you typically eat for breakfast?
I don't usually eat breakfast. I usually drink like a large pot of black tea with milk and maybe a second one, and then I eat lunch because I'm not a morning person.
For home projects, are you DIY or do you hire a professional?
Oh, I mean, I'm trying to be DIY. So if I can fix it myself, I will. And sometimes that's disastrous.
What do you prefer, working out by yourself or group fitness at the gym?
Oh, working out by myself. Absolutely.
And on your own podcast, you recently had an episode that was called 18 Ways to Stay Married for 18 Years in celebration of your wedding anniversary. So what is your favorite kind of date night?
I really like going out on a Friday to our local bar and having a big glass of Pinot Noir and talking to my husband while he listens to me. That's my favorite.
Well, thanks, Anne, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest was Anne Kennedy, and she has written a feature article for our print issue, which is brand new right now, volume 42, number 2. Her article about Jen Hatmaker is called The Theological Mess in the Moxie of Jen Hatmaker. To read Anne's article, please subscribe to the journal. A subscription is $33.50, and you can subscribe at equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Anagraff and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. And please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast hosted by CRI President Hank Anagraff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.